Okay, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning.
Morning.
Could you please state your full name and your ADC number for the record?
Robert R. Johnson, ADC number 103166.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 4B parole hearing, which is parole to a consecutive sentence or absolute discharge today. And it looks like the Department of Corrections has given us your eligibility date as July 5th of this year. So whatever the board decides today would not take place until July 5th. But we have the hearings in advance of the actual date. That's the date we were given by Department of Corrections. I know, I think they just do that to, you know, get them done in advance.
Yes, ma'am.
So I'll just start with a summary, sir. And I'll just ask you periodically if I have the information correct. You're 43 now, is that right, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
43, okay. And you're serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder in the first degree, and you have a consecutive sentence to this for 21 years for kidnapping. Is that, that's what you're understanding? And this crime occurred on January 1st, 1993. You were 17 at the time that it happened?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you were convicted by a jury trial on December 17th, 1993, and sentenced on January 31st of 94. Did you appeal your conviction?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and what was the outcome of that? We just didn't have any.
It was
upheld. Okay, so it was upheld. Sometimes we get that information, we just didn't in this packet. So it looks like you've got in your prison history, you've gotten 20 majors, sir, and some of them are pretty recent. One of them was in September 19th of 2017, you had a major for positive or refusal to UA?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and what was that? What was that for, sir? Were you using drugs, or was that you?
No, ma'am. I had severe migraines. I had a severe head trauma before I came into prison, so I suffered from them, and they took me off my meds. And I took a pill that I should have known, and it tested me positive for amphetamine.
Okay. All right. So that was amphetamine. But I noticed that you had. There were two in previous to that in 2017 that were dismissed for a procedural error on the Department of Corrections' side, and those were also for drugs or intoxicants. Then in March 17th of 2017, there was a one for intoxicant, and that was a major. What was that, sir?
I was making prison homebrew.
Okay.
I didn't make money at the time. That's
okay.
What it was.
And then I noticed there's one in 2016, in October 20th of 2016, also for intoxicants. That one was dismissed, but it, probably for some procedural error or whatever. But so we were still making hooch at that point?
No, actually, I stopped it the last one they had, I believe it was 16 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But being as I was known for making it, the one that was found in, it wasn't procedural error, it was actually in someone else's house, but I was put down as it.
Okay.
That's why it was thrown out. I went to the correct procedures to get it made clear out on that one.
Okay, all right. So so are you still involved in that, or?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
Okay, stop doing that.
You can see over the last couple of years, I've tried to stick to the straight and narrow.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good. So today is your first hearing before the board. However, it looks like in the past you had applied for a commutation of your sentence, some sort of reduction, and that was not approved. And as far as a criminal history, sir, it looks like in 92, you got involved in something, a vehicle theft or a theft or burglary, and you got probation for that. Is that accurate?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then I see another criminal damage, which was a tire slashing thing, I think, that happened. I don't know what year. And that really is the only criminal history that reflects in your record, sir. Is that accurate to your knowledge?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, that's good to know. We do have a letter on file from of support for you, and we have a couple of people on the phone with us today, and we also have in the room here an attorney and your cousin and your girlfriend present today in this hearing, and they will all be given an opportunity to speak. I also want to go over briefly your programming that you've completed on positive side here. You've done Design for Living. It looks like four times or four different parts of that program, which is a good program. Conflict resolution, substance abuse, a couple of other classes on substance abuse, thinking, like correcting thinking patterns or thinking errors. And then you've also got some trades, horticulture and construction technology. So what interested you in those?
I mean, anything I can to better myself or prepare myself for hopefully an opportunity down the road to get out and be a productive member of society. I'm taking anything I can, you know what I mean?
That's
so I'm taking all my college courses, everything like that, and plus it's a promise I made to my grandmother before she passed. She told me any opportunity I have to better myself or learn something I don't know to take advantage of.
Okay, so you're saying that you have taken some college classes too?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay, okay.
Oh, I should have over, I have like over 30, I think.
Okay, and looks like if when you are released, you would, that you're progress report suggests that you would either go to halfway house or live with your girlfriend, and you'd like to be a youth counselor at some point?
Absolutely.
Okay, maybe talking to kids about getting down the right path. Okay, so,
yeah.
All right. We haven't really talked about the crime, sir, but I'd like to have you tell us, I'd like to just have you tell us what was going on in your life, and how did you get involved in that? Tell us what we need to know as background, why were you there that day, and what happened? So tell the board what happened that day, sir.
I was at my house in a model. Sorry, give me a minute, kind of. I was at my friend's house in a model with my friend Danny, and we decided to go to his house. We were always staying over each other's house in Arivaca, and we had to walk because, as you saw, I had just gotten in trouble, was on probation, so my mother had me have my car back by dark curfew, and, well, you know, it's kind of a restriction thing, so I left it there, and we decided to walk to Danny's house, and we were walking, and it's like, well, let's hitchhike, we've done it before and everything like that. It's a single road, it's not a big area or anything like that. And as we were going, the car passed us and then slowed down, came back and was like, you don't need a ride? And we're like, yeah, we're going to Arivaca. And he's like, okay. And this was Mr. Lance. We got in and proceeded heading toward Arivaca, and we had some alcohol and marijuana finally did when he pulled the car over. I came out of the back seat and yanked open the driver's door because I was under the impression that he had a weapon and pulled him out, and an altercation ensued. And it kept going on, and at one point in time he was on the ground and I had hit him with a rock, and you know, he got up like it didn't even faze him, and he's like, "Who did that? I'm gonna kill him." He started coming towards us again, and that's when it finally, he went against the car, and we were still fighting with him, and he finally got knocked out. Excuse me. And we ended up getting to the car, and I thought, after he was unconscious, and I was thinking that we were trying to store, leaving there and leaving. Danny was like, "Well, find him a spot we can take him." So I'm like, "Okay," and we head over there, and it's kind of a barren area, I guess, where there was mine shafts and whatnot, where Danny's brother worked before. We get there, and we take him out of the car and move him up by the mine shafts, and I thought it would end it there, and I'm walking away, and I probably get about 15, 20 feet away, and I look back, and that's when Danny tried to cut his throat. And that's when everything just went crazy. I didn't know what to do. I ran back up. I said, "What are you doing?" And Danny had already inflicted a mortal injury on Mr. Lance, and we had to push him out of my chat and take it off from there. I'm sorry, it's just, I'd be waiting for you to take that back.
So, Mr. Johnson, when you back away from the story, I didn't want to interrupt you, but when Mr. Lance originally picked you up, you said he was on his way to something with his wife and children, but he had a gun. So, was he on his way? What was he on his way to do?
Yeah, he was on his way to kill his ex-wife and his little girl, and he started paying child support.
So he was on his way.
That he was doing.
You thought he was on his way to kill his wife with that gun.
Yes, ma'am. And then he threatened to kill us because he had told us.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to clear that part up. And how much had you been drinking? You said you were drinking, and what were you drinking?
Beverage shots. And it was, we didn't even go through a bottle between us. It was small, like
right. Size
bottles, but still, it's enough to where I wasn't thinking how I should be. I should have been, and that's was idiotic on my part.
Right. Okay. And do you know what happened to your co-defendant? Where is he now?
He's in Cheyenne.
Okay, so
he's made his first parole and all that. And
okay, so he's in prison.
Yes, ma'am. He got the same sentence I was. I have.
Oh, he got the same sentence. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought of something else I was going to ask you, but I forgot it again, so I'll turn it over to my fellow board members. Anyone have a question? Mr. Quinones has a question for you.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Redhouse. Mr. Johnson, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You state routinely that this isn't a trial, and from my perspective, it's about learning about you, but still, I think another piece is the accountability for the crime itself.
Sure.
And I recognize you've been in the Department of Corrections for some time now, but I can't help but ask a few questions. One was, there was statements about a gun.
Yes, sir.
Did you guys recover a gun?
No, sir.
Okay, so why did you think he had a gun?
Not knowing him, not knowing who he is, anything like that, if I'm going to tend to believe what he's saying. I didn't know this. This is the first time I ever met this individual. I didn't know his character or anything.
And am I correct that you stole his vehicle after he was killed?
Yes, sir.
Why did you do that?
That was the quickest way to get away from what happened.
Well, there's notes in the pre-sentencing report that you and your friends went cruising and that you put a radio in the vehicle, and it is kind of curious. So, how long were you out before you were arrested? I mean, from the time that...
11 days, 10 days.
Okay. Your version of the event, was this a version that, now again, how many people were with you again?
It's Danny and myself.
Okay, so, I guess I'm just a bit concerned about your version of the event, because there's no one else that can account for it. So, both of you told this story about the victim posing a threat to you, correct?
Yes, sir.
And your answer to this threat was to kill him.
That was not my answer to the threat.
Well, whose idea was that again?
I was walking away when it happened.
Okay. I apologize, Mr. Johnson. I know I'm asking some pointed questions, but this
That's
is
right.
the first time before the board, and I think it's really important we understand the event.
Yes, sir. I was walking away when it happened. Do I take full responsibility for my role in happening when it happened? Absolutely. You know what I mean? I've never denied that. I never will. And I wish I could take it back every day of my life. But it's hard.
I had a follow-up question about your time inside the Department of Corrections.
Yes,
you stated that you had some ongoing issues with migraines.
Yes, sir. I had severe head trauma when I was 16. I was in a car wreck at Darlene Matoma. Messed my head up pretty bad.
So, I know that you accounted for having a pill that you shouldn't have.
Yes, sir.
It was a stimulant, is that right?
Yes, sir.
How did that help your migraine? And I'm actually just asking you to ask you, do stimulants calm the migraine?
Yes, sir.
And it was in pill form?
Well, yes, sir. It's a pill that someone had given me because they knew I was in bed or they were like, we're taking this, this will help you. And my idiot self took it instead of asking about it first. But when I went to see the neurologist here and everything like that, and that's what they had prescribed me on before they went around and took everybody off their medications.
medication exactly, sir?
They had me on gabapentin and tramadol.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Any other questions by board members?
Yes.
Dr. Wright has a question. And Mr. Johnson, I am so sorry. I think I neglected to introduce the board members. And so we have, at the far end, opposite from me, is Mr. Quinones, who you just spoke to. Mr. Neal is next to him. This is Dr. Wright. He's our board chairman, and he has a question for you.
Thank you. And welcome to the board. This is your first time coming before this board. It's my understanding, of course, you was back in 95 or sometime ago, a long time ago. But in recent times, this is your first time coming for the board, and as Honorable Mr. Quinones said, that this gives us an opportunity to get to know you, who you are, and we'll get a better chance to know who you are through your attorney and through your supporters who are here and on the phone. I'm just trying to make sure that I understand now. Your co-defendant, the two of you were, what, you were friends, am I correct? You and your co-defendant were friends, and y'all were walking, and the victim, what? How did you come in contact with the victim that day, sir? This is not a trial. Let me say that again, as Mr. Corwin has already indicated. We cannot try you. This board does not have that authority. But just trying to get to know you, so we just want to, you know, I just want to know what some of the facts are. Some of them are already included, you know, in the pre-sentence report and so forth, and some of them just not quite clear. That's the reason I'm asking. So exactly what was going on there, sir?
He picked us up.
He picked you up.
I hitchhiked you back to Danny's house.
Mm-hmm. So he was taking you back to Danny's house. And what happened? I know you already told us, but he was taking you back to Danny's house. And so what happened? That was the victim who had the alcohol, sir?
No, we had it.
You had it, okay. So what kind of alcohol did you have, sir?
Peppermint schnapps.
And so you and the co-defendant, y'all were just drinking and socializing, I guess I'll put it that way. So y'all just socializing. Okay. And so how did who picked up the rock or what happened? I'm still trying to figure out exactly what happened, sir. How did someone end up being murdered? The victim was murdered, sir. I understand you did not do it, but you were present. I understand that, yes, sir. I think I understand that, yes, sir.
I don't know what went through Danny's mind to make that the end result, but that's the tragedy that ended up happening. And then when I turned around, he was, after we had moved him, when I turned around that day, I was, what are you doing?
I don't believe you might be, and I just don't know it. You are not a medical professional or nothing of that nature. But was the victim, was he dead at that time, sir? Did you have a feeling that he was dead or alive at that time, sir?
When I went back up there, I believe he was still breathing.
Now that you've had, you know, all these years to reflect on that situation, what would you have done different, sir?
I would have stayed in my house. I would have stayed in my house or broke my rule of restriction and drove up there. But pertaining to the fact when he said that and when the conversation occurred and that's what we were led to believe about what he was doing and the intentions when he pulled the car over, I would have just got out right there and left.
And you didn't have your vehicle because you had had some problem and your family would not let you drive yours, so you have to...
I had my home map before dark, yes, sir.
Let me just jump around just for a moment, sir, rather than continue. Let me just ask this. I know this is your first time coming before this board in recent times, and first time you've come before this board to be considered moved to the next consecutive sentence, parole to the next sentence. In your other mind, what would it mean to you for this board to move you to the next consecutive sentence or parole you to the next number? What would that mean to you, sir?
That someone believes that I might have a chance of one day be a product to say I make amends for what I've done, if it's to the people that are here trying to help me now, to the family of Mr. Lance, or like I said, my thing, I want to be a youth counselor if it's helping change another child's life to not take the path that mine did, or a split second of uncertainty or misunderstanding would change your whole life. That's why I try to better myself through education and everything. This entire time that I've been, I have been incarcerated, taking advantage of everything I can, because I just don't want to be someone that's just here. I want to show that I've matured and changed and take responsibility for their wrongdoings.
I do take note, in a positive sense, you've taken these college courses. Did you complete your, have you completed your degree down at, where's that?
I think I'm blank two minutes shy right now, sir.
Oh, well, congratulations. You're really making progress. And again, what is your degree in, sir, or will be in, sir?
It'll be in business.
Business, okay. Why'd you select business, sir? Just trying to get to know you. Why'd you select business, sir?
That's the only one that they have in class that they offer us here in DOC right now.
Okay. And you had a number of other courses, programs, I guess we should call it, since you've been incarcerated. So you've been quite busy since you've been incarcerated. I'm not correct,
sir. Yes, sir. I try to stay employed the whole time, everything.
I recognize the fact that we're not at that point yet in terms of your future, but I do take note that you would want to stay at a halfway house. Any particular reason why you might want to stay at a halfway house once you are a parole? I know we're not there yet, but if we think about the future, since you put this in your release plan, sir.
The reason being because due to the fact I have been incarcerated for so long, and I want to make sure that while I love my girlfriend and everything like that, I want to make sure that I'm ready even to be around, adjusted and be around her, you know what I mean? I mean, if that makes sense, because I know nothing out there now. It's been almost 27 years as of right now.
I guess my final question for right now is, because I'm not talking about your college courses now, but in terms of your other courses, you know, conflict resolution, design for living, substance abuse, and so forth, and so on, cognitive thinking, horror culture. So which of those have been most valuable to you? Which of those courses, programs have been most valuable to you and to your future, sir?
I would think anger management, because it's taught me to think, even if it's to take 10 seconds to think about a situation, a question, or a problem before I react to it, and if I see any part of it being wrong, then it probably is.
So now you... If you were, well, I guess I'll put it this way, since you're incarcerated at the moment, if another person, I don't like the word inmate, but I'm just going to use that word just for this purpose, if another inmate came up to you and started cursing you out now, how would you react, sir? I'm speaking of anger management from that standpoint. What would you do, sir?
I would I either walk away or find out what the real root of the problem is, because I try to make myself a person that I've actually been like a mentor to the younger generation that's come in and stuff like that. And try to show it and show by myself. That's why I have no violence on my record or anything like that. That it's not the way. You can talk out almost any situation.
Okay.
You can find out what the real root of the matter is, and it's usually just, and especially in here, is usually someone just really having a bad day.
I just wish some of the people in society would look at it that same way as well. Persons who are not incarcerated, then we wouldn't have so much violence, I don't think, even at this point in time. Okay, I probably have some more questions, but I'm going to stop at this time for time management purposes, and I know that your supporters want to speak, so thank you so very much, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
So, Mr. Johnson, I remembered my question from earlier. You had indicated that you were on probation for, I think that was for the car theft and theft and those earlier. So you were on probation at the time this occurred. Was your co-defendant also on probation?
No, ma'am.
Okay, so he hadn't been involved in that other crime?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right, sir. Okay, Mr. Johnson, we're at a point, I think, in the hearing, and I'll give you opportunity to make a statement at the end if there's, you know, stray thoughts come in and you may want to tell us at the end. So I'll give you that opportunity. But I think I'll go to your supporters now and ask if they would like to address the board. And I think I'll start with the people who are on the phone, I'll ask your attorney. Would that be?
So right now, the only person on the phone is, I'm the same voice for Mr. Johnson's attorney.
Please come up to
the other mic, so John can hear me.
Let's get your name, please. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Sam Koistra. Okay. I'm one of Mr. Johnson's attorneys. On the phone right now, we have Amy Armstrong. She's Mr. Johnson's other attorney.
Okay.
She's based in California and wasn't able to make the trip today, but she wanted to be able to listen in. I don't think she is planning on speaking. Unless I forget something, in which case she probably will. the second person we wanted on the phone was John's sister, Angel Olson. I think you've gotten a text message from her.
Was she going to call you, or should we try to call her?
She tried to call back and was having some trouble. I think if we try her number again, we'd be able to get her on the phone.
And that was Ms. Ross.
Ms. Ross.
Oh, okay.
I need your help. Yeah, it's the second number. I'm sorry, it's the first number. It's the first number. The two. We're trying to reach Ms. Ross. Is she available?
Who's that?
Maybe we don't have the right number. Is this 204-304-6126?
Nope, this is 9126.
Okay, well, we got to. That's our mistake on our end. Thank you, sir.
Good.
Sorry to worry you.
Good.
That'll probably do it.
Who's still on the line right now?
Ms. Armstrong.
Ms. Armstrong?
Yes, I'm still on the line.
Thank you. I'm going to try to patch this in again. I apologize for the delay. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you.
Six one two six.
Six one two six.
I can see right here. Yeah. Ms. Ross? Ms. Ross?
Yes, the parole hearing.
Okay. Okay, well, we're going to tie you into the parole hearing, so just hang on to the phone. Don't hang up on us. Ms. Armstrong, you still on?
Yep, I am.
And Ms. Ross, have you pulled over yet?
Yes, I'm there. Thank you.
Okay, well, the hearing is in progress, and the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse is conducting a hearing, and one of Mr. Johnson's attorneys is at the dais now, so we'll be ready to move forward as soon as he's ready.
All righty.
Okay, so Ms. Ross, we were holding the hearing, and we're at a point where we were ready to have supporters of Mr. Johnson speak. So is there anything you would like to tell the board today?
Well, you got me submitted better, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So to ask about, not sure, I think I said a lot in there, but I think John has done amazingly well for what he's faced in prison and has not, you know, become a really bitter, nasty person. And I think that's important when you're considering parole. He is very, very happy to have family again and have family support. I think he took it really hard when our mom passed away. And he was open with me about how, you know, he didn't conduct himself that well for a period of time after that. But at that point, he kind of thought he had nobody left in the world and he was going to be in jail for the rest of his life. So it's nice to see that turnaround in his demeanor and his attitude and his actions. So I just really appreciated getting to know him. I've definitely changed my opinion on people that are incarcerated now that I've, you know, have somebody in my family and have, you know, gotten to know him and figured out the situation.
Okay, anything else?
Did you guys have any questions for me?
I don't. Well, I do. How long have you known Mr. Johnson?
I found out about him a year ago in February. And we started communicating in June.
Okay.
Of 2018.
Okay. All right. Any questions from other board members?
I just want to make sure I understand, Madam Chair. So the family, I mean, after the mother passed, the family kind of, there was kind of, what, a period of separation, and now the family is, and Mr. Johnson is back communicating. Am I hearing that correct, ma'am?
Well, actually, I was adopted when I was young.
Yeah,
and
yes, you included that in your letter, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so we didn't even know each other at the point, but I know John has a lot of contact with some of his extended family, just due to his wife, and I guess his sort of opinion about that, and so didn't have, you know, family that was regular for a period of time.
And how did you get back in contact with him recently? I think you said about a year and a half ago. Well, how did that happen?
I actually went on a Facebook group that helps people that are adopted search for their family. They came across my birth mom's obituary, and John was named there. And so then I went looking there as to where exactly he was, and were able to find things through the media and through court records and that sort of thing. And then also his worker from the quality had been in contact with John's aunt and my aunt, and my aunt had actually passed Holly's number on to me, so that if I wanted to get in contact with John, I could. And so I contacted Holly and made sure that I had the address right, how to actually go about writing a letter, because that's how we started off with this letter.
So social media does work sometimes.
For good things, sometimes, yes.
That's what I wanted to ask. Now, have you had an opportunity to, I mean, I'm not trying to trap you or anything, but have you had an opportunity to visit him? I mean, other than writing, have you had an opportunity to be in contact with him otherwise, ma'am?
We have been communicating by telephone. Probably late last fall, early November, December-ish. So he's called me regularly, like every week since then. I have not gone down there yet to meet him in person because I had started a new job and didn't have any holidays. So I will be doing that in the near future. And my children will be along with me for that if possible.
Thank you so very much. I don't have any further questions at this time, Honorable Mr. Rendell.
Okay. No other questions. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ross. And you're sure that Ms. Armstrong doesn't want to?
I don't think she wants to speak.
Ms. Armstrong, did you want to share anything with the board?
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Like Mr. Coulter said, I'm mostly here as a backup in the event that he forgets to say something. So I would prefer to let Mr. Coulter speak first, and then if you don't mind circling back around to me at the very end, if I have my 2 cents, I'll put it in.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your consideration.
And if you just, you can just stay on the phone and listen if you'd like to the rest of the hearing, or disconnect, whatever is your pleasure.
Oh, I'd like to hear. That would be great.
Thank you. Okay. So, Mr. Plister, what else?
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. I think if it makes sense for y'all, what we can do is I can, now that we've heard from our folks on the phone, I can say what I'm going to say. And then we can circle back to John's other supporters, if that makes sense.
That's fine.
And just to say clarity, it's not apparent from her letter. Ms. Ross is actually in Manitoba, Canada, which I think is probably an added factor. She hasn't made a trip. It's longer than most trips. Just for the record again, my name is Sam Poistra. I am one of John's attorneys. I'm on post-conviction. Other attorney, which also have
I do that to you on the phone. Is it possible to put your phone on mute so that we can, because we're getting some feedback and this hearing is being recorded. I believe it's coming from Ms. Ross and
Sorry. Yeah, hopefully that's not muted now.
Okay, thank you.
Sounds like it is. So in addition to myself and Ms. Armstrong, we have Holly Clifton here. She's also a member of John's defense team. She's our mitigation specialist. In addition to Angel on the phone here, we have two of John's supporters. We have his girlfriend, Nicole Shepherd, and his cousin, Mercy Stanley. We'll be hearing from them in just a minute. And just for the record, I don't believe we have a victim representative here, but I just wanted to make sure and acknowledge them if they are. Okay.
They didn't sign in. Just put it that way.
Got it. First and foremost, we're here because of the tragic death of Richard Lance. I think we should start out anything by just acknowledging that. Really, the circumstances that bring us here are that led to his death are pretty unusual. And I know John, I think, gave a very thorough account of the offense. I know the board had some questions about it, so if y'all will bear with me, I'd like to sort of go back over the events just to make sure we're all clear about what actually transpired on New Year's Day in 1993 when this happened. This is not a case where John or his co-defendant, Daniel Andreth, woke up with the intention of committing a crime that day. Your two teenage boys, they were at John's house in Amado. They were trying to get to Danny's house in Aravaca, just to hang out, as teenagers do. As John mentioned, he was sort of grounded by his mom. He had access to a car, but wasn't able to take it out after night. He didn't want to get in trouble with his mom, so the two boys decided to get to Aravaca, and they would try hitchhiking. And that's the sequence of events that put them in Mr. Lance's car that night, because he's the one that stopped to pick them up. Now, the version of events we heard from John today is the same version of events he told police when he was arrested about a week after the crime. It's the same version, frankly, that Danny gave to the police when he was arrested. And it's the same version that was presented at John's trial, same version at Danny's trial. and his version, Danny, as John mentioned, appeared before this board in 2017, and I was able to review that hearing, and it's been consistent throughout that this is the version of events that happened. So in the course of the ride, there was some alcohol being consumed by all the folks in the car. Mr. Lance began making some statements about his ex-wife and his estranged daughter, making some violent threats about them. During the course of the police investigation, Mr. Lance's ex-wife corroborated to the police that in the past he had made similar threats to her. So it's not an anomalous thing. The threats initially were about his ex-wife and his daughter. That was turned into threats about John and Danny. He referenced having a gun. No gun was ever recovered, as far as the record shows. But the boys believed he had a gun. I think that's where that comes from. So the argument occurs. The situation escalates into a fight that occurs on the side of the road. Initially, it's Danny and Mr. Lance fighting. John gets involved. He strikes Mr. Lance with a rock. The fight continues, and Mr. Lance is eventually knocked unconscious. At Danny's suggestion, they take him to a location, a rural location outside of Aravaca. When they're at that location is when Danny stabs Mr. Lance fatally with a pocket knife that he had on his person, just a regular, daily carry pocket knife. And then Mr. Lance passed away from that injury. It's a tragic event to hear it unfold like that, particularly because, as John mentioned, it didn't have to happen. There were places along the way that he couldn't control Mr. Lance's actions, he couldn't control Danny's actions, but he could control his own. He could have walked away, he could have just not gone out that night. And I think he acknowledges and recognizes that today as an adult. But what I think is important to remember is that when this crime happened, John was not an adult, and neither was Danny. They were both teenagers. They were in high school. And the fact their age at the time this happened, I think it's very relevant to understanding what happened and why it happened. So, back when John was originally prosecuted in the early 90s, that was the era of what, we call the super predator back then. I'm sure this board is familiar with that concept. It was very prevalent in the early 90s. It was this idea that juvenile offenders were uniquely dangerous, and some of them more dangerous than adult offenders. So we need to respond proportionately to that danger with extreme, tough sentences for youth who commit serious crimes. And that was the atmosphere where John was prosecuted. That was certainly the atmosphere that prevailed in Tucson at the time. We had a very aggressive prosecutor, and that was the philosophy he pursued in John's case, Danny's case.
She thinks because this is an international call that we won't call back at this time. So I just want to put that on record. Okay. Thank you so much. And you.
Thank you.
Please continue.
If we hear differently, we'll communicate that.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. That was the super predator philosophy. It's really what predominated around the country, really, in the early 90s when Mr. Johnson was being prosecuted because of this unique fear that we had about juvenile offenders, the danger we thought they posed. Really, in the last, Washington, that was reflected in John's sentence and in Danny's. So they had separate trials in front of the same judge with the same prosecutor, and they received identical convictions and sentences. The natural life sentence with a consecutive 21-year term for the kidnap. What's interesting is that since John's been convicted in the last 15 to 20 years, we've really seen a sea change in the way that we think about and talk about juvenile crime. And a lot of that has been informed by these advances that have happened and our understanding of how the juvenile brain develops. Did everyone receive the packet that we submitted to the board?
Okay. Yes, sir. We have that.
Terrific.
I think this is the packet you're
talking. Yes, sir. That's the very one. I have an extra copy if someone needs one. So one of the things we attached to that packet was a report prepared by Dr. Vincent Kulata, who is a neuropsychologist. He was retained as part of John's post-conviction case, but we thought that the information he had was really relevant to the decision this board is faced with. And, you know, what we've learned about juveniles over the years is that structurally their brains are different than adult brains, that the part of the brain that controls what we call executive functions, like rational decision-making, thinking through a process, board orientation, that doesn't really come fully online until your mid to late 20s. You know, when you are, by concept, when you're a teenager, you have that capacity for rational thinking, but it's not as fully formed as it is in an adult. What is fully formed in juveniles is that's called a limbic system, is the part of the brain that controls the fight or flight response, emotional responses, things like that. And so when teenagers are faced with new or stressful situations, not always, but the tendency is for them to rely on the part of the brain that's most developed, which is this, the limbic system, which is, you know, more of a reactive, emotional, you know, not thinking in the future, just reacting in the moment type of thing. Obviously, that's useful in some situations. In other situations, it can lead to really tragic results. But I think here, it's very clearly that phenomenon is in effect. You know, what transpired is not a rational chain of events. I think John would admit to that. I think he did admit to that earlier. You know, it's just two teenagers that unexpectedly found themselves in a very volatile situation, and they responded poorly, but they also responded in the moment without thinking about the future, which we now know is sort of what teenagers are wired a little bit to do. And as they become adults, you know, they make decisions, they're in that situation now as an adult with the benefit of a mature executive functioning, they wouldn't make that decision. I mention that not as an excuse, because nothing can excuse what happened. I mean, it was a tragedy, and I think, you know, John admitted that he deserves to be punished for what has happened. But I only bring it up to surprise some clarity to this board, some context, to make sense of how we got from a place where two teenagers are hitchhiking, slipping for a ride, to support someone died. Because it feels kind of anomalous. It is kind of anomalous unless you contextualize it with this deficiency that young people exhibit. Anyway, what's interesting is that the courts and the judicial system is increasingly recognizing this difference between juveniles and adults. That's sort of, without getting into details, that's sort of the premise of our post-conviction case where we have going on with John. It's also been apparent in his co-defendant's case. Mr. Landry, as I said, was originally received the same sentence as John. He got out a couple years ahead. He had representation before John did. But the original sentencing judge down in Tucson, Judge Nichols, the judge who had John's trial and Danny's trial and sentenced both of them, I believe in 2016, agreed that Danny should be resentenced and imposed a mitigated term on the consecutive sentence. And he recognized that the sentence that was imposed is really out of step with contemporary practices and really not a sentence we can hand down today. And so I think that's reflected in that. We're optimistic, you know, given John's relatively lesser degree of culpability, that we will reach a similar outcome in our case, but we're not quite there yet. So I'm sorry for belaboring all those facts. I thought that was really important context about the offense, especially given this is John's first time up. I want to make sure the board had that. I just briefly wanted to talk a little bit about sort of the second half of the equation here. The question about, you know, this is a future-oriented proceeding in a lot of ways. We care about not just the crime, but also who John is since the crime, who it's going to be in the future. And some of the questions the board asked John earlier were really on point for highlighting some important factors about his character. You know, prison is a challenging environment. I'm sure this board is well aware. It can be a violent place. It can be a place where there's not a lot of options for rehabilitation. You know, unfortunately, we wish that there were more resources. I think we all do to assist with rehabilitation. But you know, backs over the yard. Sometimes it is limited, especially if you're serving the life sentence. And what we see in John's case is someone who has gone above and beyond and has affirmatively tried to avoid violent situations and who has made an affirmative point to seek out rehabilitation whenever it's available to him. So just to discuss John's disciplinary history, as he alluded to, in the 26 years now that he's been in DOC custody, he has zero disciplinary violations for acts of violence. He has no tickets for violence. And John talked a little bit about the mindset he has around that and how part of that is lessons he learned through his programming. But I think that shows two, I mean, really critical things about John. One is that he's just a person that's not predisposed to violence. It's difficult to go a quarter century in prison without a ticket for violence if you are a violent person by nature. And the other thing that shows about John, I think, is maybe even more significant, is that compared to the sort of impulsive person he was as a teenager, today he is someone has a more future orientation and is thinking about avoiding problems before they happen, about putting himself, taking himself out of bad situations or defusing bad situations before they turn. And that really shows a maturation and a change in mindset and just abilities that we don't expect of a teenager. Obviously, similar stuff with his programming. You know, he has sought out lots of programming. I don't need to go over all of it. The board discussed it. John has worked consistently throughout prison. I think, you know, the last 25 years, there's only a few gaps in his work history, and that's usually when he's transferred between units and is looking for a new job assignment. He has mostly, you know, satisfactory and exceeds expectations evaluations on his work history over that period of time. So he's not just consistently working, he's consistently being a dependable hard worker. I think that's a work ethic that would really benefit him well in the community. Beyond that, you know, John has sought other resources outside of the prison. We mentioned, you know, John was 17, hadn't completed high school yet when he was arrested, and he got his GED. Since then, he sought other vocational, other classes. We get, you know, there's a certificate in our packet from the University of Arizona. He completed a horticulture class through there. John also has taken some classes at Eastern Arizona College. His transcript is attached to the packet as well. His GPA is better than my law school GPA. all of these things are examples of situations where John has shown that he now has a future orientation, right? These are instances of delayed gratification. He's doing this thing that's not fun now, taking a business math class, which I don't think would ever be fun. And I'm knowing with the understanding that this will help me somewhere in the future. And in his case, that's particularly speculative, given that he's currently serving an indeterminate sentence. He doesn't know he's going to have the opportunity in the community to make use of those things, but he's done it anyway, hoping, you know, that in the future it will pay off down the line. And that's exactly the kind of adult decision-making process we hope to see in folks as they get older. As the board mentioned, John does have a couple recent tickets. The unclean UAs that were discussed. John's explanation is the explanation I would give you. I just want to make sure we're crystal clear on context. When John was 16, he was in a serious car accident. He was thrown from the vehicle. He was medevaced to the hospital in Tucson. He was in there for a couple weeks. And you can actually, John tilts his head down a little bit. You actually can see the scar on the top of his head from where that happened, from the operation he had as a result of that. He's had migraines since then. That's been really the primary lasting effect of that injury. And John, as we mentioned, was previously, these are migraines he can control with medication. He was on medication in the prison to control those, but for whatever reason, the healthcare contractor decided that medication was no longer necessary, and unsurprisingly, he began to have incidents of migraines again. And he, you know, on at least one occasion sought out some kind of relief, something he thought would be helpful. That's not the best way to handle that. I mean, John admitted it was a stupid decision to make. But I think what's really relevant for this board is that that unclean UA reflects not a substance abuse problem, but a healthcare problem. And that when John's on the outside has access to healthcare, it's not a situation where he's going to be relapsing into a substance abuse problem that he doesn't have. So I just wanted to be clear on sort of the stakes there. Just a couple of last things briefly. I know I'm running a little bit long, so I thank you for your...
I think Amy Armstrong has been dropped from the call earlier.
Has she been dropped?
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I thought I saw her.
Ms. Armstrong, are you still on the call?
She just said she's on hold. She thinks...
Oh, I thought I had her on.
Ms. Armstrong. Ms. Ross.
If your number's there.
Okay.
There's an extra button. It was on. Sorry.
Hello, are you still on phone, Ms. Armstrong?
I might have been joining your hold music for some time.
Oh, okay. Well, we sincerely apologize, but thanks to one of the persons who were in the room called to our attention, so we're back on the line now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Enjoy the teleconference. I guess I was closing with a couple last thoughts. The first is about the Johnson Reentry Plan. We heard from Angela already. We're going to hear from Mercy and Nicole a second. I've already received some letters that you've had a chance to review, but it's very clear that John has support in the community. He's got a family and friends that love and care about him and will provide him with structure and help and vocational assistance, housing if he needs it when he gets out. And I think that's an excellent resource for him. But I think what's really special about John is that he has the presence of mind and the humility to realize that when he gets out, there is going to be a bit of a learning curve, as there is for anybody that's being released after serving a long sentence. That's a total switch for folks. In John's case, really, he's got a kind of a double whammy because this will be his first time on the outside as an adult. So even folks that are transitioning after long sentences who have been adults on the outside will have skills and experiences from their earlier time as an adult that John doesn't have. So he's going to have to be doing that. You know, both these things at the same time. And so realizing that he's going to have a steep learning curve, and that's why he has mentioned his interest in finding a halfway house. And we have been working with a local organization in Tucson. It's called Exodus Community Services. They provide transitional living space for folks that are returning from incarceration. They have some counselors and mental health people on staff. And we've been talking with them about developing a program specifically for folks like John and some of our other clients who are in similar situations, who are facing reentering society as adults for the first time and sort of the unique demands that brings. And so our hope is that Exodus will give him a little bit of a boost. But between that and his excellent community support and just his own internal strength, sort of maturity that he has developed and shown over the years, that those three things together will really help him make a successful transition should this board agree to let him continue on to his consecutive sentence. The last thing is just a personal note. I've been John's lawyer for about 2.5 years now, and I've gotten to know him a lot over that time. We visit regularly at the prison. We talk on the phone. We've learned a lot about his personal history. A lot of that's summarized in Dr. Kulata's report, but also a lot about who John is now. And the main takeaway I have about John as a person is just how invested he is in other people. He's really a people person. Whenever a CEO is bringing him out to visit, they're always having a polite, friendly conversation, which some of my other clients is not always the case. John gets along with pretty much everybody. We sit down for our visits. His first question, the first thing he says, just about always, is it's not a question about his case or a complaint about what's going on in the prison. He wants to know how other folks on the team are doing. He wants to know about Amy or about Holly or about folks in the office. That's just kind of what his orientation is. And just as an example, earlier this year, Ms. Clifton's mother was in the hospital. She's fine, thankfully, but around that time, I had a visit with John. It was back in January, and we were getting ready to file this post-conviction petition. We ended up filing it in March. And as we sat down, the very single first question he had wasn't what's going on with the petition, it's how's Holly's mom doing? And we spent the first 5 or 10 minutes talking about that. And I think that really reflects on who John is, on how he's a person who, thinks about other people first. And that, together with the maturation he has shown, nothing he can do can make up for Mr. Lance's death. I think that's clear. I think John recognizes that. But his care for other folks he exhibits today, the level of maturity and forward thinking and building towards tomorrow that he exhibits every day. I think that really is who John is and serve him well. So unless there are any questions about what I said or maybe some things I somehow didn't say that this board is interested in that could provide some additional context to, I would be happy to do it.
Questions from board members? No?
All right, thank you so much. I know I took up a lot of your time today. I think it's important. I guess next we're going to turn things over to some of John's supporters. That's all right.
Sure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Who would like to come up first? Good morning.
Hi.
And please state your name.
Nicole Shepard.
Okay. And what would you like to tell the board?
I wanted to come and support for his role. I have to reiterate that is his nature to be first towards somebody else. I am not like some new girlfriend. I hope the board got my letter. I was also with John when I was 16 and he was 15 with a newborn child. So he's not, I've known him for many, many years and we did lose contact. And then he was more so one day after his friends than raise a baby. That was my responsibility. It was not biologically his. So we went our separate ways. But here over like the last year and a half, we've reconnected and been talking and we've become very close. And he has matured more into focusing more on getting things better for himself and learning to be ready for when he does come into the world. And I'm not good at public speaking and I'm kind of mumbling.
You're doing fine.
Is there any questions you guys would like?
Any questions? Thank you. Thanks so much for coming today.
You're welcome.
Good morning. And what's your name, please?
I'm Mercy Stanley. I am Johnny's cousin. His mom was my aunt and my mom's sister. I just want to say that I've known John since he was little. And the person that is described in what the incident that happened is not the Johnny that I've known. He has always been very kind, very sweet. He always wants to help everybody else. Everybody else's happiness is always come before it, and I just hope that you find it in yourselves to look at who he really is and not just the crime that happened and grant his parole. I did also write a letter to you guys of things. He's a wonderful person. I've seen him grow. We lost contact for a little while, but we have gotten back in contact. I have not been approved for phone calls yet, but we've been writing back and forth. And just still having his positive attitude and going and making sure that when he does or if he does get released, he has a good future. That's the Johnny I know. His characteristic is wonderful, smart, and I just hope everybody takes that into consideration.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you again. Thank you for coming today. Was that it? Anyone else?
Yes, ma'am. I think Mercy was our last supporter today.
Okay.
We I'm going to check with Ms. Armstrong, but I probably forgot something.
Okay, and Ms. Armstrong?
Sure, yes, thank you so much. And I'm sorry, of course, I missed a bit of what Mr. Koester said, so I don't want to be repetitive. So I'll just keep this a little bit more to a personal observation. I've spent my career representing folks on death row, and before Mr. Johnson and the small handful of other clients that we now represent in juvenile life without parole cases, I've only worked with one other juvenile. So I'm learning a lot in the last several years about juvenile, adolescent development, behavior, et cetera. And I guess from my perspective, you know, John really exemplifies, you know, the circumstance, the set of circumstances that we have in these cases where we have a crime event that's riddled with impulsivity, susceptibility to negative influence, the types of things that we see with children whose frontal lobes are not yet developed. We see those things in John's case, and of course I've only met him in the last couple of years. I didn't know him then, but now I see a fully formed, responsible, caring adult, and I echo Mr. Cloistra's comments about John's special attunement with others. He really puts others before himself. And for my money, that's the kind of person that we should be, you know, recognizing is capable of rehabilitation and redemption. Because when you're other-focused, you're much less likely to make these kinds of mistakes that hurt people, like you did when you were a child.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions from fellow board members? Okay, thanks again for hanging in with us and all the phone problems today. We appreciate it.
Thank you all. I was just, I'm sorry, that's one other thing I wanted to say. Thank you so much for being so accommodating to you know, the telephonic witnesses. I know it can be complicated, and so we very much appreciate your willingness to do that.
Well, all the testimony adds a lot to hearing, so we appreciate that too. And it's got to be hard to be the person on the phone. I think it'd be just as difficult. So
it's not as good as being there in person. I will say that.
Exactly. Okay. Well, Mr. Johnson, we're coming up toward the end of your hearing now, and I want to give you the opportunity, or if you want to allow your attorney the opportunity to make a final statement. If there's anything else that you wanted the board to consider, if you had any of those stray thoughts that came to you during this. Is there anything else, sir?
Well, maybe it's pretty much whipped through it, and my supporters, as you know, I mean, I'm not so much effort being there to speak on my behalf, you know what I mean? But like my sister said earlier, after my mom passed, I really thought I was looking at spending the rest of my life in here and having no family left. And now that I have that hope, thanks to Mr. Cloistra and Ms. Armstrong, Ms. Clifton, and now I have my cousin and a sister I never knew, and Nicole, it's like, all I want to do is leave each day to make them proud, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my main goal, is that if I disappoint one, I disappoint all, and that's one of my biggest fears, is just disappointing them. So, it's... All I can really say is I've done everything I can to try to better myself, and I will continue to do so, regardless of the decision, you know what I mean? Because that's who I am today, not who I was then. And I just like, I thank you all for your consideration.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Did you want to add anything, Mr. Quister?
State your name. I'm sorry. His name is Sam Quister. I don't have much to add. I think John really is his best advocate, you know. This is about it's an individualized determination. This is about who John is and who John can be. And I think, you know, what he's demonstrated through his life over the last 25 years, that he's not sort of impressionable, impulsive, easily, you know, susceptible to peer pressure teenager that he was 26 years ago. And I thank the board so much for his forbearance and listening to me go on and on today. I just appreciate, you know, your careful consideration of his case. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Johnson, the board is going to go into discussion. We do all our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So we haven't talked about your case before right now. And we just ask that you stay on the phone, just remain silent, and we'll be back with you in just a moment after the board completes its decision. Okay, sir?
Thank you, ma'am.
All right, thank you. The board's now in discussion. Well, Mr. Johnson is, we have a number of these cases that where he got involved in this crime as a juvenile, and has really, to my view, applied himself, especially with programming. And the only thing that's the little troubling thing to me is the recent discipline and the manufacturing of the hooch and taking the amphetamine although I get migraines too, and I know when you're having a migraine, all you want is relief, but he knows that was wrong, and in his setting, it was probably the wrong thing to do. I appreciated some things. One of the things that his supporters testified is his focus on other people, and I think we see that. I mean, I think in this discussion today, we've heard that he is not self-focused. And I do think he shows remorse. I think he had a lot of difficulty just describing what happened because of that remorse. I think that really troubles him every day. I appreciate his continuing to go to school and to better himself. I appreciated that the first time we referred to the victim in this crime, who I do not want to forget, that there was a victim, and that most likely, according to the reports we read, the victim was still alive when they pushed him down the mine shaft. So I don't want to not acknowledge that. That must have been a horrible, horrible thing for him to go through. But Mr. Johnson referred to him on his first opportunity, he referred to him as Mr. Lance. And I think that shows some respect and, you know, on his part. So I'm, at this point, I'm feeling like I could be, I could support a parole to his consecutive sentence, but I'd love to hear what fellow board members think. Other comments, Mr. Kanyonis?
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. I do not feel much differently than you. I am concerned about discipline him so recent, because otherwise I'm impressed with his rehabilitation, and I think he's shown promise. But I always have that concern about discipline him so close to that first hearing time, and I recognize that's not firm science, but I can't help but pay attention to it, kind of a warning flag. But I'll continue from there. Thank you.
Understood.
But
Mr. Neal?
Well, I agree with Mr. Kiwanis on that. You know, a lot of things look good. One thing, it's not really detrimental in my mind to the progress he's made, but the use of his age to sort of mitigate what happened. I've seen, since I've been on board, the majority of the people who commit murders that we see are adults, and they make the same bad choices. So, you know, where is that differentiation? And by the same token, there are a lot of juveniles out there who get drunk and do stupid things, but they don't kill anybody in the process. So I just have a real problem with the use of age you know, brain maturity and all that stuff, especially all of the studies I've seen use about 1/400 millionth of the society that they've looked at to make their determination. A very, 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 very small portion. But like I say, he has made great progress, but the recent disciplinary infractions are very troublesome to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that, yes, he's made progress. Yeah, I mean, he's really impressive. He's done a number of great things, especially in the field of education. However, I am still concerned, but two things I'm concerned about. One is the fact that those recent disciplines, you know, I mean, I know that's always a concern, and I know he's given reasons for them, and I can respect that. And the second one, and there is no, we do not have a policy, and I'm not speaking of policy, and it just, as one board member, one of my concerns always is when, for the first time, when someone comes before this board, I do have some concerns, and that has nothing to do with and Mr. Johnson, but that's just as one board member of my concerns. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. Well, based on everything and what I expressed earlier, I'm going to make a motion and we'll just see where it goes. My motion will be that we grant parole to a consecutive sentence, which is 412B, and we deny absolute discharge today. Okay, not hearing any second or agreement, then I would just ask for a counter motion.
I would like to make a counter motion to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence for absolute discharge.
Second.
That's a motion.
Agree.
Seconded, Mr. Neal agreed, Dr. White, and I'll disagree. Based on the year of the crime, how do board members feel about a set-off?
For a one-year set-off.
Release type denied is 412B, which is to a consecutive sentence and absolute discharge. Reasons for denial: serious environment offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury. I'm going to say victim harassment because of the nature of the way that the crime was carried out. Recent disciplinary infractions. I will not, however, check no family, community support, or lack of programming, because all of those things are evident, and there's a good release plan. Any other reasons that board members want to add? Okay, all right, back to you, Mr. Johnson. The board has voted to deny parole today, and so you heard that most of the concern is about the discipline, or a good deal of the concern is about the recent discipline, sir.
Well, recent is 3 years ago.
Well, recent is
2017.
Here it is.
Well, 2 years ago, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, and I mean, we I guess we see lots of cases and we kind of take them all. It's kind of, we see the whole picture, the big picture. But we are, you know, we're absolutely pleased with your progress educationally, and would look for avoiding any discipline. You know, make sure that you're avoiding discipline, and continue down the path you're on. So the department will certify you to come before the board again in approximately 1 year. And we will we'll talk to you at that time. We look forward to it, and we'll talk to you at that point, sir. And we want to thank everyone, and Ms. Armstrong, and people that are here today. Thank you, and your hearing is over, sir. And thank you for participating in your hearing today. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Armstrong will be disconnecting.